All right, ladies and gentlemen, I have with me online Dr. Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul. Good afternoon, Congressman.
Good afternoon. Nice to be with you.
Well, nice of you to show up here today. I appreciate that very much. I know you've been a very busy guy running your campaign and getting your congressional seat locked up. Congratulations on that.
And, well, thank you.
And it didn't look like it was as bad. You got, what, a 70% vote down there?
We got 70. You know, I think the opposition really made a major mistake because they went and sent out a release bragging that they were way ahead. We never believed that, but, you know, it makes you always concerned when they start talking that way, wondering whether our statistics were different than theirs. But what it did, it really generated a lot of excitement on our side, and we had a lot of volunteers come in. The funds that we needed were raised, and we did fine, but I think it sort of backfired. They really energized our campaign once they started bragging that they were so far ahead of us.
Well, and from what I understand, that this guy used to be in your camp and then decided he could strike on his own and do it better than you.
Yeah, it was less than a year ago. He came and sat down with me and told me how much he respected me and he wouldn't ever run against me. And then all of a sudden he decided that. But one of the things that we used in our campaign, we took a quote that he had placed in a newspaper in an interview. They interviewed him, and it was a very, very favorable quote. So we literally ran on his quote that he made of me. So he sort of, I guess, got encouraged to run against me. Somebody obviously had to influence him.
Politics is strange bedfellows. Okay, here's the Mac Daddy of the question that everybody's been waiting to hear you answer. Are you, sir, still in this presidential race?
Yes, I am. I am, and I've, made a statement here a few weeks ago. I didn't think it was all that confusing, but some people listened to the first paragraph or two and read the first paragraph or two and didn't read the whole thing. Yes, but I didn't want to pretend that, you know, we were on the verge of all of a sudden getting more votes for the convention than John McCain. I think I'd lose credibility if I was arguing that case. But I'm in the campaign, and it's still going on. There had been 11 people involved, and there's only two. McCain has what is considered as enough votes to win at the convention. But there's nothing wrong with campaigning for the maximum number of votes and the maximum amount of delegates. And just see what happens. And right now we've gotten some very favorable articles. Newsweek just wrote up a nice article talking about, you know, that we have 800,000 supporters. We've garnered that many votes. And I think the one big difference with our people is the people who vote for us are also campaigners. In the other campaigns, the people who vote superficially for, you know, a Mitt Romney or somebody, maybe only 2% of the people who vote for a candidate like that are actually real enthusiastic supporters who will go out on the street and wave signs and campaign. This is different. If we get a voter, they usually understand the issues, but the rest of the crowd don't really understand the issues in detail. So we have very, very solid support. And that's why we had a greater presence than all the other candidates put together. You know, at all the rallies and all the debates, our people were the most enthusiastic because they had something to believe in.
Well, and on that subject, there were 11 men, and there's only two standing. Of course, you mentioned Mr. McCain. Ron, I know that you're the consummate statesman and you don't deride people, but that's my job.
Mm-hmm.
They put up mini me here for the GOP favorite, Mr. McCain, and I see absolutely no difference between him and George Bush as far as the foreign policy goes. The difference being that Mr. McCain is a war veteran, he was a prisoner of war, and all of those things. But this is not the best choice. What seems to be lacking in the conversations out there in the mainstream media's anymore is what to do about this failing economy. Now, you, sir, are in a position. Hillary's running on her. She wants her national health care, her socialistic program put into place. You, being a doctor for some 40-some years and delivering over 4,000 babies, you know the health care system in this country. You know why it's failing. But more importantly, sir, you should be the one that they should be coming to with microphone in hand to ask you about this failing economy.
Yeah, and even in the debates, I didn't generally get any direction, any questions directed toward me in that manner. I remember one of the early debates that I was excluded from, you know, in Iowa, was put on by a tax group, of all groups, a tax group. And I thought, well, you know, I thought maybe I had some qualifications to talk about taxes and the economy, but for some reason they weren't too interested in hearing that. But, you know, they say that the economy is the issue today and not the foreign policy, but I told Tim Russert once in the debate that I don't see how you can separate the two. How can you talk about spending $1 trillion a year overseas fighting wars where all it is a drain on us, not only physically and mentally, but financially, and not think that it doesn't have economic consequences here. I remember the 1970s so well because it was a bad decade and was a consequence of what we had in the 1960s when we pretended we could endlessly expand welfare programs and fight the Vietnam War, and then finally we had a payback period. But I believe the conditions are much worse today than they were in the 1970s, and expect the economy to be weaker and inflation to be a lot worse.
Well, sir, I know that you have made, and in politics, I consider politics as the ignoring the Constitution. That's how and why we can have all these political debates and political arguments and having one side of the aisle scratching the eyes out of the other side. And it comes down to a very simple plan here for America, this divisiveness that has happened in the political parties. Ron, I've been watching these them covering the Hillary Clinton Obama deal, and it's just absolutely mind trash. It's chewing gum for the mind. No substantive anything is being brought up. And I remember, and I watched all the debates that you took part in, and the one that particularly astounded me was, I think it was in the Carolinas, when you were asked the question, and your response about, you said that, look, this country is $60 trillion in debt. And I sat there, and I watched the audience. I watched the other candidates on the stage. They cranked their head around. They were looking at you, because they dare not say anything like that. But the vaunted talking heads, the moderators of this, didn't even bother with a 30-second follow-up. You dropped the bombshell of all bombshells during this whole presidential debate, both sides of the aisle. You didn't even get a nod or a follow-up question on that, sir.
No, it didn't then, but things are shifting a bit because, you know, I've been in and out of Congress since the 70s, and I have always quizzed the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board because I've always been on banking committee. But today, you know, when I quiz Bernanke, we do get a little of attention. We do get on the news. I get on financial statement stations now to talk about what do you mean that you would get rid of the Federal Reserve? At least they're, you know, talking about it. So it's a little bit better, but I know exactly what you're talking about. If they could ignore us completely and totally, they would, and that's what they tried to do, marginalize and ignore. But I think it's getting more difficult for them to do so, mainly because we've been spreading these messages over radio networks like this as well as on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, Mr. Paul, I've got a million and one questions, but let me ask the second biggest that's on people's minds. If you're not being nominated, you don't have enough votes for the GOP, and I've said that the GOP has a real problem. They should go back and read their own platform. It looked like it was penned by John Adams, Jefferson, or Washington himself. But we have a problem here that it's supposed to be putting the best man forth. Let's not play politics with who's the best electable to go against our opponents. This is not an either-or. This is the United States of America, and they're supposed to be following the rule book, which you mentioned quite a few times. You said I was a constitutionalist. And if we had Democrats and Republicans, and you Democrats out there don't feel better because there's blue dog Democrats out there, this whole paradigm of politics has been shifted. But you have been talking to people about the Constitution, and Mr. Paul, my fear is that they wouldn't know that Constitution from a roll of bounty, paper towels.
Yeah, that's for sure. And not only is the Constitution very, very important because it's a great document, it was not meant to be overly rigid that we could never change it. And what bothers me so much is that ignoring the Constitution, if we want to change it, if somebody puts up the case where, you know, they say, well, the federal government should be involved in education, or the federal government does need a Federal Reserve System and they don't care about gold and silver, that's one thing. But to do it by just ignoring the Constitution means that nothing is left. And that's why we're living in very dangerous times, because when our government can frighten everybody after episodes like 9/11, it makes the conditions ripe for just destroying all our personal freedoms. And that is what's happening, because the Constitution has no meaning. If we would just have to change it slowly and carefully, none of this stuff would happen. That was my argument about going into war. You know, there are times, very, very rare, that we should go to war. But the founders said, do it cautiously. It should never be done by the executive branch. But now, we've been fighting these wars off and on since World War II, and we never declare them. And if something doesn't change, we probably never will again, and we will have a military dictatorship, because all the seeds have been sown, you know, for that. I mean, the emergency powers available to a president are so overwhelming that one individual, if he so desired, if there was some event, anything equivalent to a 9/11, I think at the rate we're going, the American people are going to be so complacent that they're going to go along with it.
Well, and they're going to get a wake-up call here real fast. I am one of these guys. I knew of you, Mr. Paul. By the way, when you were a doctor, you did your residency in Pittsburgh?
That's right, at McGee Women's Hospital.
Did you ever make it down to Westmoreland Hospital?
I sure did.
That's the place I was born. I was born in Greensburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah.
And did you actually run a 9-800 when you were in school?
Yeah, I was at the Dormont High School.
I'll be. Fastest guy in the world, I think, was Bobby Hayes at the time. He ran the 100-yard dash at 9 seconds flat.
Yeah, now they don't even run the 100 yards anymore, do they?
No, it's the 40.
I don't know what high school kids do, whether it's all meters or yards.
You're either quick or you're not. All right, we only have a couple minutes left here, and I'm skipping the breaks. My apologies to all the affiliates out there. This is too important to take crash commercialism here at this point. And Mr. Paul, we're going to have you back, because what I'd like to do in the near future here is to have you back for at least an hour if we could, and so we could take phone calls so you can hear the questions and the feedback from the listeners and all your supporters out there. It's been an exercise. Here's the next question.
Okay.
If the GOP obviously is going to pick Mr. McCain here because he's got the votes, and you're going to stick in this race until November, at any point in time, with all the support out there, and you said it yourself, you've had more support than any other candidate, I think, combined, at least showing up at the rallies and everything else, would you ever or are you considering running independent?
I'm not considering it, no. I just think that is very, very remote. Determination is not, I don't have a date certain, whether it's the convention or before that, but I've said if there are primaries still going on and there are supporters there and they want me to come and we want to maximize what we're doing, and there's a lot of things going, even when the states have had their primaries, because they're going through caucuses and they're picking delegates and they're having their county conventions and the state convention. So I just think it's important that we keep talking. Why should this be conceded to just another individual who's not different than the two Democrats? Mm-hmm. So, but I haven't been thinking about it, and I think I have no intention of running in a third party or independent. I did that in 1988, and unfortunately in this country, the system is so biased. I would admit, you know, this might be a good year for somebody to do it. You know, if you had the money of a Ross Perot, it might be feasible. But you get up a person like Ross Perot, he has the money, but he really doesn't have the philosophy. And this year, though, I can't see how so many people are going to be, they have to be very, very frustrated with their choices.
Yeah.
But I'm not planning on doing that.
Yeah, and here again, the choices that we have, well, maybe Mitt Romney hasn't run through all of its money. Maybe he can give you some. Well, we've had a very interesting year this year, and I was one of these guys, and I knew of you, Mr. Paul, but I wanted to talk to the people that knew you the best. Your chief of staff in Washington, Tom Lizardo, Penny Langford down here in Texas. I mean, I'd spent hours with these people discussing you and the campaign, and you're the real deal, that's for sure. Now, you have spoken. Where do we go from here? You've got another term as U.S. congressman. But as I was explaining to people or attempting to, and Mr. Lizardo, he said, look, he said, this just isn't about one election, either congressional or presidential. This is about long term. And I wonder if you can expound on that, because everybody, and one day I hope people didn't think me blasphemous on this deal. I said, but you know what? They hung Jesus Christ. They put him on a cross. They killed him. Are you going to say that Jesus Christ was a failure because he allowed them to kill him? Look, you know, you did your effort here for the presidency, but where's the Ron Paul revolution going from here, and what are you looking for?
Well, if it's a true revolution, it's going to spontaneously continue, and much of it has. There's a lot of people running for office at state level and even for Congress right now that have been energized by this. But because we have been a focus of the revolution, I will do my best to keep the enthusiasm going even after the election. And that means there's educational needs, there are political organization needs and political training. And there's so much activity that can be done. We'll be capable of raising some money and helping the candidates. Are there true believers? It's amazing, though, how many people become interested once they know you can raise money. All of a sudden, yeah, I'm a true believer.
Yeah, right.
So we have to be careful there. But, no, I believe there are a lot, though. There's a lot of enthusiasm going on. But there's no way I can walk away from what has happened this last year has been, I feel like I've reached more people than all the other years put together, and I've been doing it for a long time. And I was pleasantly surprised because I was pessimistic. I didn't want to do. I said it wasn't time. I thought it might take another generation to get a bunch of people together like this. And actually, the 800,000 who have already made a commitment, that's one number. But you ought to see the number of people who wouldn't dare vote a Republican primary, you know, independents and even Democrats and all other kind of people that might be outside the particular party process. So there's a lot of people out there. It's probably a lot bigger than a million people who are very interested in what we're doing.
Well, and on that note, you have sponsored bills as a congressman. You've got another couple of years up there, and I have the sneaking suspicion you've gained a reputation on Washington D.C. as being Dr. No, and I was so looking forward to the day that they would have to go from Dr. No to Yes, Mr. President, Yes, Mr. President. But you have started something, and you are going to be able to help people, and I think people are not going to forget about Ron Paul here, that's for sure, because we did start something here. And people were dropping the old party line, the old, I call them the lever pullers. They just walked into a voting booth and pulled a straight ticket, and that was it. You were pulling people from Hillary Clinton. You were pulling people from Barack Obama. You were pulling people from all the other, and what a slew of people that were loaded up on the GOP. You outdid them all as far as the guy that should be the president of this country right now. Now, that's not just my opinion. There's millions of opinions that are supportive of that. But what is next? As you being, again, seated congressman for another term, what's next for Ron Paul in the U.S. Congress?
Well, in the Congress, I'll continue to do what I've been doing. One of the issues that I've worked on the longest and sort of spurred me on even in the 70s was the monetary issue, and I think that's going to be the big issue, economically speaking. Of course, that's connected to the issue of individual liberty, because it's this destruction of liberty through war overseas and war against our liberties here, which undermines, causes us to spend so much money and undermines our dollar. So I'm going to continue to talk about monetary policy, and I think soon we'll probably be forced into some monetary reform, and hopefully I can participate in that debate. I think everybody has a responsibility. Everybody's responsibilities are different. There's what I do is different than what others are able to do. What you do, you have a program, and you reach a lot of people, too. So we all have our responsibilities. I know there's a bunch out there that are, much more creative than I ever could be with the Internet and the computer.
Oh, but I have some good news on that front. There was an individual, we represented a pool of individuals, but for a parallel campaign that were going to dump up to $100 million into a parallel campaign, we couldn't do the official one. But what I'm going to do with that $100 million now, sir, and I guarantee your voice and what Ron Paul is about on what you just said, monetary policy, I'm going to make sure that millions of Americans hear this. We're going to take that $100 million, and we're going to buy radio stations with it.
Wow, that'd be great.
And it's the re-education of America because, sir, they don't even know what country they're living in anymore. They don't understand the Constitution. And, folks, you can go to HBO, for gosh sakes, and there's a series on John Adams now running. I think it's a 6-part series. People have forgotten why this country became so great. Why we're the envy instead of the most scorned and hated now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. It's for people to reconnect. And that's certainly not being projected by John McCain or Hillary or Obama or anybody else. It is about the rule book. It is about the Constitution and the rule of law. I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole about how many different ways that's been violated. Well, sir, we're at the bottom of the hour, and
okay.
I know you have to go, but if I reschedule it out, can you rejoin us for an hour so we can take some calls?
Well, I won't make an absolute promise, but I'll make a promise that I will make every effort to
okay.
do it. Sometimes it's hard to squeeze the 60 minutes together, but we will certainly consider it seriously.
All righty. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Appreciate it.